Good morning. This is the Healthcare Consultants Podcast with Nick Augustine for the law firm of Michael V. Favia and Associates in Chicago. And today we are here with specialty insurance specialist Jason Quaglia from Risk Management Solutions of America. Jason, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
Doing well. Looking forward to hearing all sorts of good information about insurance today because people love that topic.
Oh, man. Hopefully everyone stays awake through the duration of the show.
All right. Well, I'm going to lead off with something kind of interesting, which is golf outings and hole-in-ones. So I didn't realize when I was younger, my father worked at a radio station, and I helped with some of the promotion work, and there was a hole-in-one win a new Chevy Silverado. And I thought that was really cool, and I thought, you know, these people putting this on, you know, where does this truck come? And I always thought car dealerships just made so much money that they just offer up these trucks, and I just thought that was just great. And then my father told me that someone buys an insurance policy insuring against the person actually getting the hole in one, and that if they get the hole in one, then the coverage kicks in, but otherwise they just had to buy a specially priced premium that the actuaries determine the likelihood that someone's going to hit the hole-in-one.
Yeah, Nick, and it's interesting you bring that up because as I've written those policies in the past, the underwriting, you know, how far are you from the pin? You know, what's located, you know, in between? You know, there's all these various factors to determine the pricing.
Sure.
And, you know, obviously the higher the chances of a hole-in-one, the more the premium. So
yeah, what happened? Yeah, so there's a lot there.
Yeah, it's a real neat specialty line of coverage.
Yeah, and people don't realize that that's out there. So, you know, it's an interesting thing, too, when we look at for a lot of us, our introduction to investing for the future comes through buying insurance, and usually it's life insurance. And so the word insurance, I think people tie it to coverage for home, life, car, you know, when something breaks or, we have a car wreck, we need to replace the car. But insurance also is a financial vehicle, too. So there's a lot of stuff to talk about. So where do you want to start?
I mean, one interesting fact, since you were talking about that, one of the earliest forms of risk management that's documented, actually, I learned this early on in my career, was traders in Mesopotamia would spread their loads out among multiple boats. So in the event of a boat sinking, they didn't lose their total haul. And, I always think that's a neat fact to lay on people because, it just really goes to show that insurance is inherent in business and in life. And a lot of people don't realize that.
There's risk all over the place, and it's an interesting thing as well. In law, we often talk about the coveted indemnification contracts that really, without insurance or money behind it, is nothing more than a piece of paper, and you owe this person, and now what? So it's important to have a lot of different coverage options there, and today we're talking about specialty insurance. So high-risk insurance coverage in healthcare and medical, all the cyber liability stuff, the medical billing errors, and hard-to-place insurance options. So, Jason, within the world of healthcare coverage, and most of our audience members for today's podcast are in that bucket, so to speak, what are some of the common things that doctors need to know to have a relationship with you? Where do you work with them?
Yeah, so, I mean, my specialty is healthcare. I cover, areas from medical malpractice for practitioners, as well as professional liability and general liability for, entities, whether it be a physician group, a clinic, surgery center, hospital, or long-term care facility. I also have a specialty in medical product liability as well. My career started in 2008. I actually started out in life insurance. And in 2011, I became a wholesale broker for professional liability, and I've been in the industry ever since. I've got extensive relationships in London and Bermuda, you know, for any type of non-standard risk, as well as relationships with all our domestic healthcare carriers, from CNA, MedPro, the doctors' companies, to name a few.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about malpractice coverage, and that is, how do you know you are following the terms in your malpractice policy? And I relate this back to a law firm malpractice thing. When I worked at a firm in Chicago, witnesses going back many years, where our outgoing mail, we had to have a separate, just like a spiral notebook that we wrote who it was going to, what it was, and what it was a additional duplicate copy of all of our correspondence. And that was required by the malpractice policy to have duplicate backups of what was going out. So it was an interesting thing because I thought, that's funny, I've never seen a law firm do this before. All the other firms I've worked at never did this. And it's just, does this people just require this? This is interesting. And then, you know, you get into sometimes when those claims get litigated and, you know, so I always thought it was interesting. Do people read their policies and actually follow the rules in them?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how obvious it is, but the first thing we always recommend in insurance is be sure to read your policies. You know, I read so many policies a week that generally all insurance policies follow a set structure.
Mm.
So if you're, you know, if you're new to insurance or new to contracts, you know, I always like to read the insuring agreements to see what's being covered. I like to read the definition of insured so you understand who is covered. And then I like to read the exclusions to see, you know, what is not being covered. And then you have the conditions section, which, you know, basically says how you have to comply with the coverage form. And, you know, being becoming acquainted with your insurance policy is a good way to avoid, you know, those types of pitfalls and being outside of compliance. But I think what you're referring to is probably, you know, something that would be found in the conditions section. Similar to that, you know, cyber liability insurance nowadays is requiring dual authentication. And, you know, when it comes to wire transfers, they're making sure that you have you're contacting the receiver directly to reconfirm the wiring instructions to avoid, you know, potential wire fraud claims. So depending on the line of coverage, you know, there are nuances and things that, you know, standards of care that the insurance carriers expect you to comply with. And some are better than others at, you know, making sure that you're aware of that. But a lot of your insurance companies will provide you with some type of risk control or loss control services, which, you know, generally come free with the policies. And it's always good to take advantage of those because, you know, maybe there's some things that can help you, you know, further secure your business, but also just improve your processes and you know, protect your company so you don't have to rely on the insurance in the event, you know what I mean, and avoid a potential
right.
loss.
So there at Risk Management Solutions of America, do you all help your insured kind of as consultants, so to speak, make sure they're doing what they need to be doing? Do they ask you, am I covered? Are my practices, you know, in my practice, my practices and my practice are good?
Yeah, so Risk Management Solutions, we've been in business since 1996. Our principal, Benny Jones, as the founder of the company, he started off in claims. So everything from work comp, general liability. So he really knows how it looks on the other side of the coin.
Right.
My partner on the brokerage side, his name's John Hibbett. He was a risk manager for a large county in Illinois as well as a large school district in Illinois. And so he really has that eye for, you know, we met with a clinic in Schaumburg yesterday, and, you know, as John walks around, he's pointing things out, you know, just little things, little ways that you can kind of reduce loss. My specialty in particular is negotiating coverages and rates. So that's really where my strength is, making sure that the proper coverages are in place, finding the markets that have the good claims handling, that have the broad policy wording, as well as competitive pricing.
That's very good and very smart, because there are so many different sizes of practices and so many different, you know, volumes of business that different people do and how they're set up. And certain healthcare professionals are in such limited capacities that, like, little specialties that they've carved out for themselves, or they function in a way that may be different than the bigger groups, so their liability would arguably be less, so why should they have to pay as much as, you know, bigger guy next door? So that makes a lot of sense, especially as we see, especially with dentists buying into selling and doing different things with dental practices alone, the dental service organizations. That's something that has come into fruition since I've been on the marketing plan for all of this. And, you know, so we see, a wide variety of what people are doing out there. Let's talk a little bit about some of the more interesting things that your guy probably cannot pick out by doing a walkthrough. Cyber liability, sex abuse and molestation, medical billing errors, the active shooter, some of the notes that we shared earlier. Active shooter coverage, man, I wouldn't even have, you know, if I'm going through and thinking about the insurance I need for a dental practice, I don't know that I would even have thought of some of those things.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with insurance is you can basically buy insurance for every exposure, but at some point there's, a cost-benefit analysis that needs to be done. And, you know, the businesses have to, you know, make a decision of what risks they're going to retain and which risks they're going to cede to a third party. You know, just some of the ones you touched on, cyber liability is big. We're seeing in the medical field specifically, we're seeing a ton of ransomware events. Ransomware is basically where a bad actor comes in and takes control of your system and locks you out, and then they require some type of payment in order to get your data back. And the interesting thing about this segment of cyber liability exposures is it has become such a it's become so lucrative for these hackers that they are trying to make it as legitimate as possible, so people continue to pay the ransoms. So in some cases I've heard that they even have, you know, call centers to help you make the transfer. And
sure,
they want to make sure that people are getting their data back, so people continue to pay the ransoms. It's crazy.
And Bitcoin, don't they? Isn't it? They all want Bitcoin. Maybe they've moved on. But
yeah, I mean, no. At one point, that was the case, because they were under the impression that, you know, you couldn't trace Bitcoin transactions. But some of our claims people at these large insurance companies have said that even Bitcoin transactions can be traced. So, I haven't been the part of a ransomware transaction, so I couldn't tell you what type of payment they're looking for. But yeah, no, it's wild what's going on.
What else can go wrong? Lots can go wrong.
As far as cyber liability or just...
Cyber liability is just... I think that the thing with cyber liability is that it's... You know, if you called it computer liability, it would be document liability. But because it's tech, I think people are freaked out by that. And I think that people easily get freaked out by AI being in the news, deepfake videos being in the news, and people generally have insecurity because of lack of knowledge leads people into the panic zone. So the way to work with the panic zone is to make sure that we're well covered with insurance if things go wrong there. So, I mean, there's everything from websites. I know someone was talking about, you know, your website is not compliant with the deaf and blind requirements of the Americans for Disabilities Act, and then it was an issue of maybe the only that was only for websites for enterprise level this or that. But I mean, if you start looking for things, things to have to panic over with cyber liability, there's a lot. But you all cover that. So, but moving on. Sexual abuse and molestation in the workplace. That was another thing that you dropped a note about. That's, we're getting into intentional acts of people. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So one differentiation I like to make is that there's a difference between, coverage for abuse and molestation and sexual harassment. Sexual harassment is an HR concern, and that's generally covered by an employment practices liability policy. All right. Sexual abuse and molestation deals with accusations of some type of physical or sexual assault on a third party. And this is not coverage meant to defend a guilty party. This is coverage to make sure that the victim is made whole and the innocent parties are defended. And
okay.
Most insurance policies that are in the healthcare realm include this coverage. And if you do not have that coverage standard on your healthcare policy, then we need to talk.
Now, is that something that most people would need to, I'm starting to think, anyone with a business with employees needs to have some sort of coverage like that.
I mean, and that's very true. So we serve a multitude of industries. A lot of, so the way it started when I first started working with monoline abuse and molestation was generally the companies that were dealing with the most vulnerable were purchasing it. Anyone who's dealing with children, developmentally disabled, or any type of senior. But it has grown out of there. I mean, as we see, things with what happened in Hollywood and things of that nature. Any industry is vulnerable to an abuse and molestation suit. So it's just some of them have a higher frequency or odds of one of those claims happening.
Right. The medical billing errors and omissions is a interesting one. I wonder how often technology gets blamed on that, where it's, humans entering information and the computer did something with it. Funny. But medical billing errors, that's an interesting thing. And I'm assuming, I don't really work in the world of medical billing, but I know that lawyer billing, they always tell you to do it, like bill everything. And then no charge the stuff you don't want to charge, but bill it now, because if you go back and bill things later, the tendency is to overbill, or actually the tendency is rather to underbill and leave things on the table and try to find out, what you did. But billing for things kind of goes hand in hand with the proof of the service that happened. So I, in my head, I'm thinking, I could see a medical malpractice issue and then the billing not matching up with what was, hey, we billed her for the right leg. We were supposed to cut the left leg,
Yeah. That's interesting. So a couple things. So the way healthcare is going, that's so technology centric. One of the early claims we were seeing, from a technology standpoint was converting paper records into electronic formats. And some of the types of things, as these optical reading scanners were working, is that sometimes decimal places were moved, when it came to reading numbers, and dosages were off, and sometimes it led to death or serious injury. But medical billing is a little different. So anyone who bills Medicare or Medicaid has become under scrutiny for either fraudulent billing or billing errors or, things of that nature. And the reason I decided to focus on medical billing errors and omissions as its own standalone line of coverage was I was going to visit my father in the hospital up in Michigan, and I heard on the news that Michigan, I don't remember which department it was. I think it was like a Michigan department that administered Medicare or Medicaid funds was calling for whistleblowers and was going to pay them substantially to notify of any type of companies that were committing any type of
they get paid, they get money.
Yeah, exactly. So basically setting a bounty on the heads of medical billers. You know, so that made me realize that the state of Michigan is advertising that, it's only a matter of time. And the record judgments, you know, I saw judgments upwards of $300 million in the fines and penalties due to medical billing errors and medical billing fraud. So, you know, the government's winning these cases, and, you know, so it's only going to spread throughout the country as one jurisdiction becomes successful at recouping.
Yeah, it makes me think about the people who drive around to businesses and say, you're not ADA compliant. Where's your wheelchair, Raf? I got my lawyer here. You know, they file a claim.
We're right there.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Active shooter coverage. Now, that's a – let me tell you this. Like, I was in law, my third year of law school in Chicago at the John Marshall Law School when 9/11 happened. And I guess, like, this is where my brain first goes when we talk about active shooters. I just remember all the people, the guys with machine guns standing all over in the loop, you know, outside of buildings and everything, you know, worried about anything that could happen. But I guess it really has nothing to do with active shooters. But at any rate, it's my story. So we haven't had, you know, schools are – you know, what we often think of, but there was an episode of The Resident that I was watching, and they had an active shooter situation, and it was right after some, you know, big pileup on some freeway somewhere, and the whole hospital goes into lockdown, and it's, I can't even imagine trying to deal with that, but tell us what we need to know. If I'm a medical practitioner, you know, maybe I'm just a dentist, and I need some active shooter coverage so someone doesn't come and shoot the place up because they think their teeth are still crooked.
Yeah, you know, the thing about insurance is insurance doesn't necessarily help prevent situations from happening, but, you know, helps make everyone whole after, or tries to, after an unfortunate event. Some examples I have in healthcare, the ER is a hotbed, you know, for assault and battery on employees of a healthcare facility. Nurses all the time are assaulted by maybe clients who have some type of behavioral health issues, people who are under the influence of drugs or alcohol. You know, so there's a lot of injury that goes on, you know, that would fall under this active, you know, the term's evolving, and there's multiple, you know, different carriers doing it. So there's active shooter, there's assailant coverage, you know, there's various names that it goes by. But basically what this coverage does is, you know, in the event of some type of tragic event, they provide counseling, they provide coverage for those injured in the event, and, you know, indemnification to the families of those who perished. You know, it's just, it's a sad that, you know, where we are in our society that this is necessary. But, you know, once again, like the abuse and molestation, these events are happening everywhere. And you really can't say, oh, it only happens in manufacturing. You know, at one point, everyone just, you know, said it was happening in the post office. But no, it's really expanded out. And, you know, you have to make sure you have proper safeguards on your facilities and your people are trained in how to react in an event. And, you know, there's tons of service providers out there that can help, you know, your medical offices, your dental offices, with how to respond to, you know, how your team should respond in the event, and help coordinating communication, because communication is key, you know, in these events, and notifying law enforcement as soon as possible. So, I mean, you really want to, from an insurance and a loss control standpoint, you really want to have these practices in place, and you really want to have meetings with your employees and your team to go over these. You know, either on a biannually, I mean, some are doing it quarterly, but at minimum an annual basis on, you know, how to respond to different types events, so everyone's prepared in the event that, you know, one of these events occurs.
You know, it seems like there's so much in the world to worry about. It's almost difficult to have a good day sometimes. And, you know, the older, at least the older that I get, the more I think there's just so much in the world that I can control. And there's a lot that I can't control. So I have coverage for this, that, and everything else. But one of the things that I can control, and our kind of last thing to talk about here today is, you had a note on here about health, nutrition, and lifestyle with the Admiral Insurance Group and talking about, you know, with them with, but health and nutrition and lifestyle. So for a lot of folks, I think COVID was a big eye opener that our health is not something to gamble with. And I think that a lot of people, you know, it's not just something of vanity of, you know, I want to be in this size, you know, whatever. It's really a matter of, like, you know, what's in our food these days? You know, what are we doing with health and medical and just nutrition and lifestyle? There's just so many things that I think people are starting to take more stock in, because I think that they're wising up that there's more than just big pharma and prescriptions for all that may ail us.
Yeah, I mean, in full disclosure, as a hobby, I do organic farming. So, you know, I understand, you know, the quality of the lettuce that you grow in your backyard is, you know, the flavor, the nutrients, you know, it's just, it's so much different because you're growing heritage varieties, you know, it's not meant for commercial production. I mean, anytime you take any type of produce and make it to scale so it's able to be mechanically harvested, you know, you may be losing, you know, some certain benefits or varieties. So, you know, just diversification of your diet and where your food sources are and, you know, trying to limit, you know, the inputs that you're putting in, whether it be a pesticide or some type of fertilizer, you know, are all going to push in the right direction. And, you know, it's impossible for us to get away from, you know, going 100% off the conventional food system. But, you know, we can make our decisions and, you know, kind of spread it out. So maybe we're you know, limiting our exposure to some point. But you bring up a good point. A couple of things that we're seeing in that are emerging right now, one of them is cannabis. There's a movement, you know, there's the recreational and the medicinal cannabis movement, which a lot of our physicians may either be staying on the sidelines for because they're not sure where the liability lays. And there's actually a new program that we're offering that will provide gap coverage for any type of physicians who are operating in the cannabis field that their current standard companies are not willing to pick up. So basically it's an added layer that will provide you coverage for your work with cannabis, you know, from a professional exposure that, you know, maybe your current malpractice carrier is unwilling to cover. The other coverages we're seeing, we do a ton of work with nutraceuticals. So any non-FDA supplement, vitamin, we do a lot of the product liability, you know, for those types of products, as well as the, you know, FDA listed and you know, type 1, type 2, or type 3 medical devices. So we provide the bodily injury, and we're also able to provide the recall expense for those products as well. So any of your listeners who, you know, are tinkering in their garage and are looking to bring a product to market, you know, we're more than happy to help them with their product liability, which a lot of a lot of distributors, wholesalers require you to have in order for them to carry your product. You know, we're able to help with that, as well as products that serve minors. There's a big, you know, when you're making toys or any type of like devices for infants and toddlers, I mean, the exposure there is catastrophic because, you know, if you cause injury or disability to a child, you know, the costs associated with that are astronomical. And so, we work with programs that will help, product, you know, people bringing products to market specifically for, toddlers and infants, to obtain those coverages.
Yeah. You know, there's more as like, as more things happen in the world, there's more, I mean, really like everything that comes about is sort of in response to a need. And sometimes those needs are perceived. Sometimes those needs are kind of conjured up for the purpose of profit. But more often, I think that a lot of invention comes out of a need for making life easier. And then when we do create new things, we find out there's, you know, things that we didn't expect that were, you know, downstream. You know, well, what about this now and what about that now? The only other thing I wanted to maybe cover, what about working in office, like in medical? I mean, are there a lot of people who still do work from home? And if I have employees in a medical practice and they're, you know, they're not necessarily on site, are there any interesting additional things to think about?
So, I mean, one of the biggest things that we ran into during COVID from a work comp, you know, point is if your employees are working remote and they're, you know, injured at their house, you know, there's exposure there on the work comp policy. And I'm not an expert on how those claims are being adjudicated, but I know that is an exposure that we've been talking about in the industry. Some other things is when you have remote employees that are living outside of the state in which you're domiciled, you do need to disclose that to your work comp carrier. And I would also talk to your accountant or your lawyer about making sure that you're complying with those states' tax laws as well. But that's something that's come up, employees not residing in the domiciled state of the employer.
Well, that just triggered a thought about travel nursing and everything going on there with telemedicine is one thing. Travel nursing is a whole different deal. And now that we have the multi-state medical licensing compact, or that might not be the exact term for it, but nurses can be licensed in one state, get their license in another, and be, you know, I mean, some of them have just a big F-250 Super Duty and a fifth wheel trailer, and they pull that thing around and they go spend 7 weeks over here, then they're over here, then they're over here. But, you know, that, I mean, there's that alone, you know, and then there's the people who are the staffing agencies for the travel nurses. I mean, we can go on down the line forever. And I just hope that that you and the folks at Risk Management Solutions are able to identify what their risk exposure is and how to get them the right coverage they need.
Yeah, and, you know, just, you know, you need to make sure you have an open conversation with your insurance broker. You need to make sure that anytime something changes, you know, to go back to your original point about the documenting of the correspondence going in and out. As long as you have a good open dialogue with your insurance broker and tell them, you know, as things are changing or you have new services or you're opening a new building, things of that nature, a good broker will be able to, you know, help you assess the risk and you know, just do a quick review and ensure that you're covered. And if you're not, you know, help you obtain the proper coverage. If you're operating in a new state, if you're providing different services, if you're using PEO labor or you're, you know, subcontracting work out, if you have contracts with insurance requirements, you know, all these different things are what an insurance broker should be able to help you with. And it's one of the benefits of having a personal relationship with a broker as opposed to, you know, trying to manage your insurance by yourself online.
Excellent. What makes you a big fan of your current company you're working for? What's great about Risk Management Solutions as an employee? What do you love about them?
So, risk management solutions, we're a very flat company, so we're able to pivot quickly. We develop our own risk management software. We have a technology that helps occupational health providers with their revenue cycle management. We have a SHARP system, which helps with claims navigation for large municipal clients. We spend a lot of time and energy with our in-house development team to integrate technology, to help service our clients as well as help them mitigate and track their claims.
All right. Good information. Jason, tell us how folks can get a hold of you maybe they just want another quote and see if their current policy is doing what it needs to do, or if they can save some money or bolster some coverage, or maybe something has changed in the practice, added some things, taken some things away, and have different needs now. How does someone get in touch and start that relationship building with you?
Yeah, Nick, I am all over LinkedIn. I am all over LinkedIn. So just go ahead, find me on LinkedIn and shoot me a message. We can start there.
Yes.
I probably don't have enough time to write down my email address, and it's a little complicated anyways. But, yeah, just my name, Jason A. Quaglia, Q-U-A-G as in George, L-I-A on LinkedIn. And, I'm like one of three Jasons on LinkedIn. Just reach out and we can discuss your risk. Our consultation is always free, and we can do a policy review, make sure you have the proper coverage, and if you don't, we can help you out.
Yeah. By the way, a big shout out to LinkedIn. I remember being an earlier adopter of LinkedIn in 2008, and not a lot of people were on there yet. And then, LinkedIn is such a great place, and it functions. A lot of the social media functions like one another. So, things are kind of seamless nowadays. For a while, it took some of the platforms to get there. But LinkedIn is such a great place, and I hope that more people find people they're looking for on LinkedIn and don't just, blow right past it. I know that we put out all of our programs on LinkedIn, so I do appreciate when people do find and hit that repost or, hit the like button and help us with engagement, because it's exactly this type of thing that so many small professional practitioners are looking to find. Doctors, dentists, everybody's busy, so busy. Nurse practitioners are busy. I mean, everybody in the organization and the business of healthcare is busy, busy. And we're constantly finding new ways and new issues that make our lives difficult and easy at the same time when we have the right people to help us. So, Jason, I thank you for your time, and I hope that people share the podcast with others when they find it. And I hope that you will come back and give us more at a future date when there's something to talk about.
Yeah, sounds great, Nick. Thanks for having me today.
All right. Thank you, everyone, and have a great day.